And turn to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2. We are given a little study or a thought as to a possibility of who the wise men were and where they came from. Now, we are not told in Matthew who they are, where they came from. So this is nothing hard and fast or nothing absolute. I'm just wanting to present circumstantial evidence that I think fits the account, and that is a possibility and maybe even a probability of who they are and where they came from. We already found out that the Hebrews, the Jews, were taken into Babylonian captivity in approximately 586 on their third deportation. It started before that, but that was the last one. And you had Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they had already taken a real strong stand for righteousness, and they wanted to do things in accordance with how God wanted them to do when they were in Jerusalem. And for that, God rewarded the three with miraculous knowledge and skill and all wisdom and literature, and gave Daniel the understanding, the miraculous understanding of visions and dreams. And so as a result of all this knowledge, the king found that Daniel and his four friends, his three friends, were 10 times more knowledgeable than all the magicians and astrologers who were in the whole Babylonian kingdom. Okay. That brings us to Daniel chapter 2. We'll start in verse 1, and we'll just read through the whole chapter here. And we'll start in verse 1. Now, in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Then the king gave the command to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans. That is the Babylonians, and that's the country that Babylon is the capital city of, to tell the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said to them, "I have a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream." Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic, "O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will give the interpretation." The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, "My decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made an ash heap. However, if you tell the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, tell me the dream and its interpretation." So, King Nebuchadnezzar has this dream, and instead of telling these wise men that are in the Babylonian kingdom what the dream is, he tells them, "You tell me what I dreamed, and then tell me the interpretation. And if you don't do this, then I will destroy all the wise men in all of Babylonia." So then, verse 7. So the wise men answer again and said, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will give the interpretation." I don't know if this had happened before, but we get, as we read further down, the king, they were very adamant because they felt like, "You tell us what you dreamed, we will give you an interpretation." Because then you could tell him anything, and who's to know if they are right? This dream troubled Nebuchadnezzar, and it was so vivid and so strong that he wanted a true answer into what it meant. And so he came up with this plan, so he felt like he would not be deceived this way. Which these wise men think that this is, which it is, this was a very, very difficult thing. So verse 8, the king answered and said, I know for certain that you would gain time because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is only one decree for you. For you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time has changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know you can give me its interpretation. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter. Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. So, they tell the king, it is impossible for a human to know what you and tell you what you dreamed. Only, now these were polytheists, the only gods could be able to tell you what you dream, because you would have to have divine knowledge. And then they say there's never been a king that has ever asked such things of wise men before, because this is impossible. In which they were letting him know, really, that the king obviously was wanting somebody who was a prophet that had divine knowledge and getting a divine message straight from God, and they were letting him know here, just from this statement, that's not us, and there's no way we can tell you what you dreamed. Verse 11, it is a difficult thing that the king requests. There is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. So, it has to be someone who's getting a message from their terminology, gods, to tell you what you have requested. For this reason, the king was angry and very furious and gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. So, the king, they said that this is impossible, we cannot do it. So, the king sent out the order, all the wise men were to be destroyed. Well, guess who is included in this? Daniel and his three friends, they were part of these wise men. Okay. Verse 13. So the decree went out, and they began killing the wise men, and they sought Daniel and his three companions to kill them also. Then with counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree from the king so urgent or harsh? Then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. So Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time that he might tell the king the interpretation. So Daniel finds out that he and his three friends are to be killed. He inquires as to why. The king's captain tells him, nobody's been able to tell him what dream he's dreamed. So Daniel goes in to the king and asks time to tell him what he's dreamed, and then he'll tell him the interpretation. So the king grants that request to give him time. So then verse 17. Then Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to, here's the Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, his companions, that's the Hebrew name for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision, so Daniel blessed the God of heaven. And so here is the blessing that Daniel gives to God, and thanking God. Verse 20, Daniel answered and said, Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are His, and He changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with Him. I thank You and praise You, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we have asked of You. For You have made known to us the king's demand. Okay. So verse 24. But we get here, Daniel was very thankful to God and praised to God and thanks God for revealing the secret, dream. Otherwise, they were about to be wiped out with the rest of the wise men. So verse 24. Therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king the interpretation." So immediately, before he goes into the king, he tells the king's captain, "Quit killing all the wise men off. I know what the dream is, and I'll tell him the interpretation, so don't kill any others." So this spares them. Verse 25. Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to him, "I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation." The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, that was his Chaldean name, Babylonian name, "Are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation?" Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, "The secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and He has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these." So, Daniel reminds the king, there's not a wise man, not an astrologer, not a magician, not a soothsayer in your whole kingdom that can tell you what you dreamed. And Daniel, by himself, would not have even been able to tell King Nebuchadnezzar what his dream is. But again, he gives God the credit from which it came. And he tells him, there is a God in heaven, the one true God, who reveals secrets, and He has bestowed upon you, King Nebuchadnezzar, a dream that is going to let you see into the future, into the latter days of things to come. Okay. And so, verse 29, this is the dream that Daniel then tells the king that he dreamed. "As for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this. And He who reveals secrets has made known to you what will be. But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living, but for our sakes who make known the interpretation to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart." So Daniel again says, this is not coming from me. This is coming from the one true God. Verse 31. "You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay, and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream. Now we will tell the interpretation of it before the king. Okay. So now that was what the dream was, and now here's the interpretation. Verse 37. You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beast of the field, and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand, and has made you ruler over all of them. You are this head of gold. So, we'll find out, we're talking about four kingdoms here, is actually what the dream was. And the first kingdom, he tells him, was you, Nebuchadnezzar. You are the first kingdom. So, the Babylonian Empire was this first kingdom here. But after you, verse 39, shall rise another kingdom inferior to yours. Then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. So, after the Babylonian Empire, there's going to be an empire that's inferior to the Babylonian Empire, probably smaller and not as strong. And then after the second empire, there's going to be a third one, and that's the kingdom of bronze, and that shall rule over all the earth. In verse 40, and the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, and like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. As you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. So all this right here from 40 to 43 is describing the fourth kingdom. Let's go over and we will discuss what these four kingdoms are. Daniel tells him, the king right here, who the first kingdom was, that's the Babylonian Empire. The second and third kingdom, we find out, not from this passage, but it is from Daniel chapter 8. Daniel had many visions throughout his life, and it seems a lot of times, and maybe most of the time, they surrounded and had to do with God's kingdom. Daniel chapter 8, this is another vision that he had that was different from the king's dream, but it all symbolized the same thing. And so we can find out what the second and third kingdoms are. Verses 20 and 21 of Daniel chapter 8. The ram which you saw, having two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. So the Medo-Persians, which was stated earlier, Persia is modern-day Iran. So that was the kingdom that was to take over after the Babylonian Empire. So that was the second kingdom. In verse 21, and the male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large horn is between its eyes. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. So the third kingdom is Greece, and who was the famous king of Greece? It was Alexander the Great. He was the large horn on this image. You can read that in of this vision that Daniel had about this ram and all of Daniel 8. But what we find out from this passage, you have the Babylonian Empire as the first kingdom. Then when the Babylonian Empire ends, the Medo-Persians will take over. And then when they end, Greece and Alexander the Great will take over. Now, we are never told in the book of Daniel who the fourth empire that takes over after the Greeks, but we know by history who it is, and it was the Roman Empire. Okay, so we've got the four kingdoms all nailed down: Babylonian Empire, Medo-Persian, the Greek Empire, and the Roman Empire. Now, we're talking about the Roman Empire in this context, starting with verse 40. And now I want to read verse 44. And this verse 44 is the key verse in all the book of Daniel, and one of the key verses even in the entire Bible. So this is a very important verse, Daniel 2:44. And in the days of these kings, that was the Roman Empire, the fourth kingdom, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So he's saying in the fourth empire, which would be the Roman Empire, God is going, the God of heaven, who revealed this dream to you, to me, to tell you, will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed. And it will not be left or ruled by other people. It'll be ruled by God. And it will break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Verse 45. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God has made known the king to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face prostrate before Daniel and commanded that they should present an offering of incense to him. Because right here, King Nebuchadnezzar, he fell down before Daniel knowing, well, this is it. He was acknowledging, you rightly told me what I dreamed, and so he knew that this interpretation was true. And so verse 47, the king answered Daniel and said, truly your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret. Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many gifts, and he made Daniel ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. Also Daniel petitioned the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So the king gave the God, told Daniel, your God is the one true God out of all of these pagan and so-called gods. This is the one true God, and the God of God, the Lord of Lords, and the revealer of secrets. And for this, he put Daniel, as verse 48, ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and made him chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. So he was the head wise man over the whole province of Babylon. So then Daniel did have one request, that he would set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. And so they went over the whole kingdom, and they ruled, they were like the chief wise men over the whole province abroad, whereas Daniel stayed with the king in his court. So what did Daniel do here? All the wise men were going to be wiped out of the, going to be killed from the Babylonian Empire. He saved all of their lives, and then he became the chief of all of the wise men, chief administrator. So what would this do with these wise men who were idolatrous worshipers, polytheists, believed in many gods, and did not believe in the God of heaven? They all of a sudden, what it seems like to me, they would realize Daniel is a true prophet from the one true God, and he has saved all of our lives. So now, since he's the chief administrator, I think very likely, in which we also know, since he was the chief administrator, Daniel started teaching the people, changed their line of teaching away from paganism and to a godly teaching. And he has already proven himself to be the prophet of God. And so what I can envision is that the wise men picked up that Daniel is talking about a futuristic kingdom that God is going to set up, and he teaches all of these wise men, and for 500 years later is actually when the Messiah is born, but they would also know the time frame here, because they would know after the Greek Empire fell, whatever empire took over after that would be when God was going to establish his kingdom. And with every kingdom comes a king. So let's go over things about what we know about the wise men. And this is talking about the wise men that show up after Jesus is born in Matthew chapter 2. They came from the east. They recognized Jesus' star when it appeared. They knew the King of the Jews resided in Jerusalem. It is evident that God was with the wise men and wanted them to see Jesus, because God caused the star to come out of the sky and led them to the house where Jesus was staying. And God was with them because he communicated to them in a dream. Okay. Now, these are things that we know about Daniel and the wise men. Daniel saved the Babylonian wise men from being destroyed by prophesying about God's coming kingdom. Daniel then became the chief administrator of the wise men for decades, because they were in a 70-year captivity. Daniel's entire life focused around prophesying God's kingdom. It is thought that Daniel never left Babylon, as well as many other Jews. After the Babylonian Empire fell, the Medo-Persians took over. Then the Medo-Persians were not as much in captivating keeping the slaves and bringing them into their empire. I heard one man say that the Medo-Persians were more like what America does, and we go and we rebuild nations, which we're doing in the Middle East and different places with Iraq. We've gone in and rebuilt them. What the Medo-Persians did was released the Hebrews and let them go back to Jerusalem, and then that king helped rebuild the city that was besieged and totally destroyed by King Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. So, now the thing is, not all of the Jews, and most of the scholars say that Daniel never left Babylon, and many other Jews stayed there in Babylon. Well, they'd been there their whole lives and now several generations. So what I can envision is, for years and decades, Daniel kept teaching the wise men and taught them about the coming kingdom, and that there would be likely a king, and then likely revealed to them that God would put a star, I guess, in a particular location that they would be looking for once the Romans took over. When the star appeared, they would know that the Messiah was born. And all they knew to do was travel to Jerusalem. They didn't realize that he was going to be in Bethlehem. So where did these wise men come from? A possibility that fits the evidence presented. God revealed his kingdom to Daniel. God also could have revealed to Daniel unrecorded details concerning the Messiah, and none of this is recorded in the Bible, but it could have been unrecorded. There are lots of things that I'm sure Daniel received, being a prophet, that were not recorded. This is a possibility that could have been one of those details, such as when the Messiah was to be born, and perhaps concerning the eventual appearance of Jesus' star in the sky, which that would explain how they knew to be looking for one. Otherwise, how would they? And they knew that this was the Messiah's star when it appeared. They recognized it as such. So they had some kind of divine knowledge. Since it was known that the kingdom would start during the Roman Empire, this knowledge could have been passed down for 500 years until the Messiah was born. So where did the wise men come from? The possibility that they came from the Babylonian Empire as a remnant of Daniel's wise men and Daniel's teaching that they passed on generation after generation. And when they knew that the fourth kingdom started, they were looking for the star, and whenever the star appeared, they traveled this 1,000 miles. Probably they traveled the same way that the Jews were taken into captivity, the 1,000 miles instead of the 500 across the desert, very likely. But this conclusion, although this is not a concrete, this is just a conclusion drawn from the evidence presented and the things that we know, this conclusion would bring Daniel's teachings full circle from God's kingdom, from God's coming kingdom, to allowing followers of Daniel's prophecy an opportunity to meet and worship the Messiah. So that's a possibility of who the wise men were and where they come from. That all the circumstantial evidence fits the conclusion, and so that, but that is a possibility. I just want to close with a summary of what this lesson was really about, who and what were present at the manger scene. We found out there are actually two separate occurrences here, and they are not one and the same. Unfortunately, people have tried to mishmash the two, bringing them into one, but that is not what happened. They're two separate events, separated possibly by 2 years. But the first one, when Jesus was possibly 2 years old, he was in a house. The ones that were present, Jesus is a young child, Mary, wise men, we don't know how many, it just more than one. There were three gifts given. There was a star that led the wise men from Jerusalem to Bethlehem and stopped over the house where Jesus was staying. And then there was a house. And then Joseph, we can infer that he was there because he was there that night. So he had not abandoned them. Whether he was there right when and met the wise men, we're not told. Okay, and then a summary of the famous manger scene when Jesus, the night Jesus was actually born. Jesus was present and listed as an infant or a babe. Mary, Joseph, the shepherds, and a manger. And that is all that is listed as being present. So at this time, let's stand and sing.